Cody. Cody Harris sat across from the new account representative at the Paloma Federal Credit Union. She watched as his field of view encompassed the teller windows and the sparse trickle of members who still came into the branch instead of using the many digital tools available to facilitate their banking needs. "Another Bears fan," he said, pointing to a young woman wearing the red, white, and blue regalia of Chicago's NFL team. Melissa Davis smiled at her customer. She knew him well from the many times he had bagged her purchases at Schramm's, Paloma's most popular grocery store. She also realized that a rewarding career and independent living were still unfulfilled dreams for many adults with Down syndrome. Cody was one of the rarities. Melissa knew the story well. It wasn't until the moment of his birth that Cody Harris's parents began to comprehend that he came to them with something extra. 30 years ago, Down syndrome still had a stigma. Even today, some hospital staff are uncomfortable explaining what lay ahead for families with children born with the extra chromosome that denotes trisomy 21. Cody's family accepted him as our miracle boy. They were on the vanguard of the early intervention movement, where children with Down syndrome began the physical therapy that strengthens muscles and prepares their tongues for speech. Cody was mainstreamed throughout his youth, going to school side by side with other age mates from his neighborhood. His parents invested in therapists and tutors long after the minuscule state funding ran out, pressing the school district to accommodate all children with special needs. Melissa knew that for Cody, this moment, when he was opening his own bank account, was a milestone. "You'll get a debit card today, Cody. What style would you like?" Melissa opened a brochure, revealing a dozen different designs he could choose from. "Paloma, you please," he said. "That's where I went to college." Paloma State University's Resource Center for Persons with Special Abilities created programming and provided resources to help make the dream of a college degree come true, no matter what tools a student might bring to the classroom. Cody displayed the class ring that glittered on his right ring finger. "Retail Management, Class of 2000. The first year of the new century." Melissa pointed to the Paloma U bumper sticker affixed to the credenza in her cubicle. "Finance and Accounting, Class of 2000. We graduated the same year." "I remember you," Cody said. He pointed to the golden necklace with the heart that Melissa wore. "That necklace. You wore it then, too." Melissa fingered the charm, opening the heart to reveal a pair of tiny photographs. "My parents," she said. "They made it all possible." Cody put his hand over his heart and smiled. "So did mine." "It will take me a few minutes to print your debit card, Cody. You can read the flyer about your new checking account while I go behind the teller cage for a few moments." Cody retrieved a green piece of paper from his shirt pocket. "Don't forget this," he said. "I don't want my account to have zeros in it." "I don't want my account to have zeros in it." Melissa laughed as she took the Schramm's grocery payroll check from her customer. "If you prefer, I can also help you set up automatic debit so you can pay your bills without having to write checks." "I would like that," Cody said, returning his gaze to the lobby area. "You really enjoy people, don't you, Cody?" "They are interesting, especially their clothes." Cody pointed to one of the members standing in the line. "Look at the pink shoelaces on that girl's Ratchford racers." Melissa focused on the young woman. She wore a purple sweatshirt, black spandex leggings, and yellow socks. Her hair was dyed a bright orange, and her facial features were augmented with half a dozen piercings. Of all the things that jumped out at her, the last thing she would have noticed were the shoes. "How did you know the brand name of those shoes, Cody?" "My customers. I try to make memories so I can compliment them when they come into the store." Cody squinted at Melissa through thick glasses that gave him near-perfect vision. "I like your eyes. They are green with little bits of brown. They look like gemstones." Melissa blushed. "Thank you very much, Cody. I like them too." The new account rep crossed the lobby. A colleague buzzed her through the security door so she could retrieve Cody's debit card from the special printer that spit them out like playing cards. Cody scanned the expanse, making mental notes about each of the customers in line. He looked out of the broad front windows of the branch at the summer afternoon, counting the headlights of the cars in the parking spaces. He frowned at the dark blue sedan that was backed in. "He made me lose count," he said to himself. That's when he heard the scream. At the front of the line, the woman with the pink shoelaces was pointing at something. Cody noticed a man in dark sweatpants with a black hoodie obscuring his features, gesturing to the teller. "Not that bag. I want the contents of the cash drawers. I know all about the ink bomb that will blow up in my face the minute I walk out of here." The man waved a 9mm Springfield handgun in the air. "Everybody keep your hands where I can see them, or my colleague will shoot you dead." Cody could see another person, almost identically dressed, standing by the door with an AR-15 semi-automatic rifle. A circular 100-round ammunition clip protruded underneath it. The man at the teller window handed over a denim sack, pointing his handgun directly at the teller's head. "Get moving. I know one of you already alerted the cops. I start killing people in 60 seconds. Melissa took the bag from the terrified teller and raced down the line as the other employees emptied the contents of their cash drawers into it. She handed the sack back to the man in the hoodie. "You have what you came for," she said. "Now go." Cody couldn't tell exactly what happened next. Perhaps Melissa saw something familiar in the features hidden underneath the black hoodie. Whatever it was, the perp knew he had been recognized. "I'm sorry, Melissa," he said. He lowered the Springfield and fired a round into the woman's chest. "All units in 4 David 15, robbery in progress at Paloma Federal Credit Union, shots fired." Detective Jessica Ramirez and her partner, Officer Alexandra Clark, were less than a block away when they got the call. 120 seconds later, their 2019 Chevy Tahoe skidded into the parking lot, blocking the front door to the branch. Guns drawn, Jess and Allie stood on each side of the entryway with their backs against the brick facing, not sure if the bad guys might still be inside. A customer opened the door. "They are gone. Someone's been shot." Allie pressed the transmit button on her handheld. 4 David 15 requesting an ambulance at Paloma Federal Credit Union. At least one gunshot victim. Jess was already inside. "Nobody leave, please. Is anybody hurt?" The branch manager opened the security door, motioning to Jess to come behind the teller cages. She saw an auburn-haired female on the ground, blood coursing out of a bullet hole in the upper right corner of her chest. The detective had her plastic body substance isolation gloves on in a second and tried to stem the flow. More units were arriving. The lobby was quickly awash with blue uniforms. Cody Harris sat silently in Melissa's cubicle, taking it all in. "What can you tell me about the robbery, Cody?" Detective Lou Harrison sat across from his witness in the same cubicle where Cody had watched events transpire. "You're sitting in Melissa's chair." The field training officer that the other cops called Kojak reflexively looked down and around the workspace. "Have you been here the whole time, Cody?" "I am waiting for my debit card." "What do you remember about what you saw?" "Melissa knew him." "What?" "Melissa knew the man with the gun." "How do you know?" "I heard him say her name." "All the bank employees wear name tags, Cody." "He said, 'I'm sorry, Melissa.'" "And you think that was a sign that he knew her?" "No. Her face said she knew him." "What do you mean?" "Her face. When people recognize me at the store, I can tell by their faces." Lou shifted his head slightly. He wanted to hear more. "Some smile, some frown. Some try not to look at me, but I can always tell that they have seen me before." Lou wrote something in his notebook. "How are you feeling, Cody? You witnessed a pretty bad thing." "I am sad. Sad about Melissa. I wonder why people kill other people just for some money." Lou exhaled in empathy. "So do we, Cody. Is there anything else you want to tell me?" "I like your shoes. They shine." Lou's eyes shifted to his feet. The one thing that was burned into his mind as a raw army recruit was to shine those shoes. He took care of his own with a zen-like attention to detail. Thank you, Cody. Would you like a ride home? With Detective Ramirez, please. Lou Harrison saw Jessica and Allie standing near the lobby entrance, keeping the reporters at bay. J-Ram! Lou could make his voice heard without raising it, a trait that frightened the hell out of the perps he interrogated. Can you and Gates give this young man a lift? Jess smiled and came to the edge of Melissa's cubicle. Absolutely, but only if Cody lets us buy him dinner. Cody smiled and nodded. He stood up, holding out a hand. Lou Harrison took it, surprised at the confidence in the grasp. Alan Edmonds, Clifton Captoe, Cody said. Harrison scratched his forehead and looked in Jess's direction, clearly confused. Jess stifled a chuckle. Your shoes, Kojak. The make and model. It helped, Jess thought, that Cody had a taste for good Mexican food. It was late enough that the suppertime regulars had drifted away from Emilio's, Paloma's premier purveyor of Latin cuisine. In many ways, the place was a hole in the wall. The tables and chairs were the same second-hand acquisitions that Emilio purchased when the place opened a quarter century earlier. The walls always made Jess feel at home. They were lined with family pictures and ragged posters promoting the Novilleros at the Plaza de Toros, Mexico. Jessica had heard it from dozens of patrons. Emilio's may have lacked an atmosphere, but its culinary creations were works of art. The kitchen door swung open and shut almost continually as the waitstaff delivered mountains of food to eager customers, for whom Emilio's was a near spiritual experience. It was a notion that Jess could tell wasn't lost on the owner. Over the doors hung a hand-painted sign. En el Trinidad de México, el frijol es el Espíritu Santo, el maíz es el padre, y el chile es el hijo. In the Trinity of Mexico, the bean is the Holy Spirit, corn is the Father, and chili is the Son. Jessica watched Cody's eyes swing around the restaurant like radar beams, studying every entree and the person who was carrying it. I like it here, he said. The people are nice, and the food is good. Jess winked at Allie. You're a man of good taste, Cody. My mother says that this is the way things were prepared at her grandmother's place in Osaka. Abuela, Cody said between bites of his carne asada. ¿Hablas español? Sí, yo hablo tres lenguas, inglés, español y alemán. Jess noticed her partner raise an eyebrow. Okay, you two, Allie said. Translate. Cody speaks three languages, Gates. English, Spanish, and German. Why do people call you Gates? Cody asked. Do you know who Bill Gates is? Microsoft. Because I know a lot about computers, they call me Gates. It's a nickname. Does it make you angry when people call you names? Nope. I like being a nerd. I think people are jealous and afraid of a smart woman. Cody pointed to his glasses. People sometimes make fun of these, but it helps me see things. Some people with perfect vision look, but they don't see. Jessica understood. They think they know a person because of how they look? Sometimes, Cody continued, other times they miss little things on the outside that can tell what's inside. Tell me more about that, Cody. Cody Harris paused to swallow a mouthful of meat and took a sip of his soft drink. Salt, he said, pointing to the ice cubes. Jess and Allie both studied the glass. Salt, they said in unison. There is salt in this drink. See how the ice cubes melt in a different way than they do in your glass, Officer Clark? It's okay to call me Allie, Cody. We're friends. Salt makes the ice melt faster. People think soda is all sugar. It isn't. How did you come to notice so many things, Cody? Everyone has minuses and pluses. Jess had come to learn that Cody sometimes spoke in riddles. If she waited long enough, he would explain. When people look at me, they see Down syndrome. I have minuses because of it. It sometimes takes me longer to learn things. And because my muscles are weaker, I don't talk the same as most people. But I have pluses. Before I could talk, I did a lot of looking and listening. I learned to see and hear. And, Jess added, you have a very good memory. You recognize Detective Harrison's shoes. I don't think he even knew what brand they were. The observation of trifles, Allie said. Jess could see that Cody's eyes were focused on his food and his mouth was full. "Sherlock Holmes," he said in the midst of chewing. Jess could tell that Allie was very interested now. "Which story?" "The Bascom Valley mystery." "Have you read every Conan Doyle Holmes story, Cody?" "Not just read. I know them. I want to review Lou's notes from his interview with our young friend," Jessica Ramirez said as she and Allie pulled away from Cody Harris's small one-bedroom townhouse at the Paloma Arc. The two police officers were both deep in thought as they drove by the 50 immaculately maintained residences that were planted in this special gated community for independent people with special needs. Allie was inspecting the utility pedestals that popped out of the ground like mushrooms, imagining the architecture of the data network that served the neighborhood. "What were you looking for?" The questions he didn't ask. "I think Cody may have seen more today than even he realizes." "You think he can help us catch the bad guys?" "Cody processes things in his own way in his own time. I think he's capable of figuring this out before we can, with a little help."
"The Sherlock Holmes stuff?"
"Exactly, my dear Gates. He knows the methods by heart, and, as we've seen tonight, he's able to make some interesting deductions." Allie played back the mental recording of the evening. "The salt thing? Couldn't that just be a factoid somebody told him?" "Data. Remember Sherlock's mindset? Never theorize without data. Cody is a data-gathering machine. He's capable of drawing the same conclusions we do. He just takes the scenic route." "A detective," Allie murmured. "Throughout his life, his teachers and therapists have helped him learn how to thrive in our alien world. Somewhere, someone taught him how to think beyond the binary judgment that so-called normal people reflexively do to get through the day. We all have our gifts. Somebody saw Cody and helped him develop it. But his worldview seems to be so loving and trusting. He's the most non-judgmental, caring person I ever met." "Maybe on the outside," Jessica said. "But inside that brain, he's processing little details and drawing conclusions. He realizes that some people think he's slow because he looks like a person with Down syndrome. He simply understands that it's their own minus, an incorrect perception, that keeps them from fully comprehending who he is. He's judging all right, but he's not condemning them for it. His compassion focuses on loving them anyway." Allie thought about her own struggles with identity and how tough it was for many of her friends to accept her gender preferences. Behind the outer self-confidence and bravado, the wounds were still deep and still raw. "Our world would be a much better place with more Codys in it." "The word in the house is that this robbery is a near-carbon copy of the last three others in our part of the state. The perps never hit the same place twice. But their M.O.s are identical."
"Ah, but what about Cody's observation that Melissa Davis knew the bad guy?"
"Yes?" Jess paused. Allie felt like she was waiting for her to catch up. "What does that tell us?" "Melissa was born and raised in Paloma. The credit union was her first job, and she was moving up through the ranks after college."
"Yup, and that means..."
There was a twinkle of illumination in Allie's eyes. "Our guy might just be from Paloma, too." Jessica liked getting up early enough to attend the morning roll call proceedings for Paloma's beat cops. The squad room at police headquarters had not changed very much since she joined the force. A few more chairs were added as the complement of officers grew, but the walls still needed painting, a quarter of a century since Sergeant Sokolov got his stripes. Sok was a trail boss, a problem solver, a psychologist, and a disciplinarian. Even Captain Batavia knew better than to get crosswise with this 6'5" ex-Marine. Legend had it that Coach Sok nearly put a stop to the protesters who overwhelmed the American embassy in Tehran during the Carter administration. When the so-called students threatened to start executing their prisoners, Sok stood at the front of the line, looking down the barrel of an AK-47, daring the insurgents to try and get past him. "You may waste me, but I'll take 10 of you little bastards with me." Nobody on the day shift wanted to make Coach Sok mad. Jess knew a different side of the man,
when she was fighting for mandatory autopsies for reported deaths over the age of 70. He was an ally. A certain district attorney was reluctant to make a recommendation to the mayor and city council. Jess would never forget watching Sock go nose to nose with the man in the DA's carefully appointed wood-paneled office. "Before you cave like the flip-flopping political punk we all know you are, think about how you'd feel if you saw your own mother like this." Sock held up a gruesome 8x10 morgue photo. It was an image that even made Jess squirm. The family claims she fell down the stairs. If it wasn't for Detective Ramirez here, that's where it would have ended. The son, a guy about your age, was bleeding her dry, withholding meds and food. When the bank account was empty, he did this. Jess accepted the photograph from Sock and watched as he put a beefy hand on the DA's shoulder. "Do the right thing, son. You don't want the world knowing that we brought you a solution and you let this abomination continue to happen. You're the only man I know who can growl and whisper at the same time," Jess observed as they left the DA's office with a promise of support. Coach Sock looked up at the cloudless Chamber of Commerce sky. His voice was unusually soft, unsteady. Jess thought she detected wetness in his eyes. "I've seen too much needless suffering." An instant later, he was back in character. "Sometimes we are all that stands between the bad guys and the good guys, Ramirez." He held up the DA's letter. "We can use all the ammunition we can get." "Listen up, ladies and gentlemen," Sock's command voice silenced the pre-roll call chatter. "Detective Harrison is here with an update on the Paloma Credit Union robbery." Jess wondered how Lou Harrison was able to pass his periodic defensive tactic recertification. His lumbering gait as he approached the podium telegraphed a pair of bad knees that had spent a few too many years supporting his 290-pound frame. "You're probably all aware that this is the fourth in a series of similar robberies that have happened across the state during the last month and a half. 2:24 p.m., two as-yet-unidentified assailants entered the Paloma Federal Credit Union. One flashed a Springfield XD9 handgun at the teller window while his partner covered the exit with an AR. He wouldn't accept the goodie bag with the ink bomb inside and, instead, had one of the women empty the tills into a dark blue sack. It was payday, so there was more money in the drawers under each teller station. He got those, too. We think the teller supervisor may have recognized the guy at the cage because he shot her dead before they bailed. Our killers wore identical outfits, roughly 5'5", 160 to 190, black sweatpants, black hoodies, black ski masks, and face paint around the eye holes to obscure their race. Nobody got the license plate, and they parked in the one spot that the cameras don't cover very well. They obviously did their homework." Harrison pushed a button on the podium laptop. A playback of the 6th surveillance cameras ran in parallel on the squad room whiteboard. Jess studied the video loop as Harrison pointed out the details of the perps and the witnesses. The one he left out was the very clear presence of Cody Harris, sitting quietly in Melissa Davis's cubicle, watching the events transpire. "The witnesses gave us pretty much what I've given you. The best vehicle description I have is a late model sedan. They melted into traffic and didn't blow any red lights. None of the city cams have anything of value for us. The tellers keep some marked money in their tills, so alert any businesses you may visit to keep those black lights handy and dial 911 after the subject leaves. The pros usually toss the small bills because they know that's what the bank typically marks. PFCU started putting marked 50s and 100s into the mix last year. Our business community should be on the lookout for anyone spending grants or Franklins." Harrison shut off the video. "These guys don't seem to hit the same town twice, but stay vigilant. We have 17 banking locations in the city. Keep your eyes open if you're nearby." Jessica rubbed her elbow with an index finger. When she was much younger, she saw one of her swimming heroes do that and thought it helped massage the part of your brain where ideas came from. Sock added a postscript. "This girl was just 27. She's the first one they have killed, assuming these dirtbags pulled all four of the robberies, like everyone seems to be thinking. She's got sisters and parents who deserve to see us arrest and prosecute those responsible. Get out there and find them." The meeting shifted topics, and Jess drifted toward the door. She wanted to speak to Cody again, but first, she needed to talk to someone else. The Down Syndrome Association of Paloma relies on the generosity of its board members. The building that houses DSAP is donated, and each of the 40 board members invests $10,000 per year for the privilege of serving. They represent the city's best and brightest and help drive fundraising that provides nearly all of the association's $1.4 million annual budget. Executive Director Julie Powell became involved like most parents the day she learned that her son Noah would be born with Down syndrome. Jess thought that Julie looked the part. She was immaculately put together. Her outfit was carefully tailored to show off a body, clearly sculpted by a personal trainer. The gold and diamond accessories spoke to her husband's success as one of Paloma General's most sought-after plastic surgeons. Jess knew it was his financial good fortune that made it possible for Julie to dedicate her time to a job that paid well below six figures. Julie could feel Jessica's eyes inspecting her. It was a different look than she got from the other women who moved in Paloma's best philanthropic circles. The envy and judgment wasn't there. Julie adjusted the Rolex watch on her left wrist, smiling at the irony of how different these two women were. "It's for fundraising," she said, reading Jessica's thoughts. "CEOs write checks based on the package. All of this," she swept her hand to encompass her outfit, "is part of that package. I'm much more comfortable in spandex." She noted Jess's knowing smile, pointing at her own more pedestrian attire. "Me too," Jess said. "I guess we all have to play the part. How long have you been with the SAP?" Julie looked toward the ceiling as if the answer might be up there somewhere. "Going on 12 years. I joined the board after Noah was born and became the executive director 5 years ago when our founder retired." "From what I've read and seen, you enjoy the job." "I started out with the sole interest of getting my son access to every advantage, but I fell in love with every new baby I met. We take welcome packages to new parents in hospitals. They are all so frightened at first. DSAP helps to empower them, reassure them, and help them see that what they've been given is truly a miracle child. The range of ability for Down syndrome kids seems to vary widely." "Absolutely. You never really know any child's potential until they reveal it. We try to connect people with the resources to help with that metamorphosis." "And it sounds like you've crossed paths with most every Down syndrome family in Paloma at one time or another." Julie's eyebrows raised almost imperceptibly. "Not everyone can navigate a challenge like this easily. Some welcome us with open arms, and some don't." "Without violating confidences, what can you tell me about Cody Harris?" Julie leaned back in the large leather chair that she knew felt a little too ostentatious for the rest of the decor. "Cody, he's truly someone special. His folks were determined to give him the keys to the best possible life, not by doing everything for him, but by challenging him to do everything for himself. They had the wherewithal to get him the best therapists and insisted on keeping him in mainstream schools." A flash of memory crossed Julie's face that made her laugh out loud. "Me? I was your quintessential helicopter parent, a royal pain in everybody's ass. I didn't ask. I demanded the best for my Noah. I got it, but I think it turned a lot of people off. That kind of intensity is great if you have a job like mine, but it's not so good if you're trying to get people to want to go the extra mile for you. Cody's parents found that secret sauce. Everybody loves them, and as a result, everybody loves Cody." Julie watched as Jessica wrote something down in her notebook. She wondered if it was about Cody or about her. "He's a pretty independent guy," Jess said. "Yes. His folks put a lot of their own philanthropy into the Ark and got him in when it first opened. They know the Schramm family and had Cody following their employees around before he could talk. You could say he's been in the grocery business almost since the day he was born." "How is it that some people with Down syndrome can develop a high level of proficiency in a particular area?" "Ah," Julie knew exactly what Jess was implying. "You're talking about his memory and observation. Nobody knows how these things work, but that's Cody's gift. It began with the shoes. He used to always be looking down, being shorter than most people, and started to make connections between what he saw on people's feet and the catalogs his mom had lying around the house. When he was old enough to navigate a computer, he began filling his brain with that information. It's really amazing how much he knows about little details like that." Julie could sense Jessica's impatience. "I don't know if you heard, But Cody was at PFCU when they were robbed yesterday. I'm not sure that our detectives on the scene took full advantage of his gifts. Julie leaned forward and rested her head on two diamond-studded hands. He can describe every inch of that place for you. I've seen him do it here. If we change a paper towel roll in the break room, he notices and tells us. That's what worries me. Julie Powell bit her lip. What do you mean? I'm afraid that if he sees our bad guys at the grocery store, he might just tell them.